Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. That was, okay, so, well, it is, this is K-Chung Radio.
What?
Yeah, and this is Nature Boy, the science podcast. So, our radio show, / podcast. Today is August 7th, and there is still no new Frank Ocean album.
Oh. Dang, heartbroken or what?
I'm heartbroken.
Mm-hmm. So, but we return to our normal...
But we're still doing... We're still doing this show,
yeah.
Even though I'm heartbroken. yeah, so this is Nature Boy. We are going to be talking about heat stress today. Yeah, because it is August and starting to get hot.
Do you know, although, did we get to post our special event podcast?
I don't think that it's has been posted quite yet.
Okay,
but
okay. There was a live studio audience for anybody who didn't know. It was fun. They kind of hung out in the grass.
Yeah, so last... Yeah.
It's on Periscope.
It is on Periscope, I think.
I saw it.
Hey, last...
Jess.
Did you see yourself readjusting your boobs on there?
No, they didn't have...
Did you watch it? Were you able to find it on Periscope?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did?
I didn't really... I mean, I didn't watch... whole thing.
Uh-huh.
How many boogers?
You just watched like the shots that you were in?
No, they actually didn't really like focus in on us. It's more of like a listening thing.
Yeah.
The way they had the camera positioned, it's just kind of like looking at the sky for most of the time. So I was happy about that because of the weird boob adjust. Because that's why I went to go look on Periscope. I was like, oh my gosh, I am so afraid of all the stuff that I was doing. I didn't know I was being videotaped. So, check it out, guys. You will not see the boob adjust.
So
you might be disappointed also, like Michael is disappointed because there's new album.
No new album. Boys, it's called Boys Don't Cry, but this boy is crying over the loss of the album. Anyway, last Saturday we did a special episode of Nature Boy for Current LA, which is the city of LA's like a public art biennial, and they commissioned a lot of artists to make work about water. And Kay Chung did programming for a couple of the sites that they had sculptures at. And we were at South Weddington Park, which is along the LA River, and we did a special episode on water. So that will be probably posted on the archive soon.
It was a lot of fun.
And on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever else we post our stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because...
That episode is about water and the runoff from that episode. is spilling into this episode.
That's right.
Because we're talking about heat stress. So a lot of the things that are relevant to, you know, water also has to do with heat regulation and things in animals. So, this show is about heat stress and how different organisms deal with it.
That makes me stressed.
It makes you, this show makes you stressed getting here?
I just meant like heat. Heat makes me stressed. I do not like to be hot. I like to be air conditioned at all times.
You like to be air conditioned at all times.
Yeah, I can't even go into genomics, the building that I work in right now.
Because I know.
The AC is out. And the lab is air conditioned, but...
So you just like, forget it, I'm not working.
Yeah, like so I'm... basically... I feel like the working conditions are too harsh for me right now, so I can't go to work. I can't.
Do you know what the
drugs?
I'm a molecular biologist. I just can't.
So do you guys know like what the temperature range for like a human is?
37. Did I make that up?
There wasn't even a unit there. All scientists are weeping. Like, all scientists are so sad right now. She's talking in Celsius for people who
degrees
don't know.
Celsius.
Yeah. 37 is like the human... 37 degrees Celsius is like perfect body temperature for humans.
I'm just warming up.
Oh, well done. Well done. Are you channeling John there? Just where he is in traffic, no one knows.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I am channeling John. John, where are you?
Actually, she's really channeling her vodka soda that she had earlier.
Oh, yeah,
morning.
Okay. It's 10 a.m. where we are right now. So.
You know what? But just, the way that I see it,
it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? 5 p.m.
I was going to say that, but I was... thinking like that's cliche, but then I'm not witty enough to come up with something quicker, and it's a long drive here, so I put it in this cup actually.
Oh.
I was just gonna say, did you just admit to the audience you were drinking and driving?
No, I drank it once I got to the parking lot.
Okay, there we go. Safety first, people. Safety first.
Let's talk about the topic. Yeah.
So what is? It's not 37 degrees Celsius.
Well, that's like the average human temperature range. Yeah, but the average human temperature is 37 degrees Celsius, right? Normal body temperature. So that's. But like.
When did things start unfolding? So for people who don't know, what is the danger of overheating?
I guess. Well, let's talk about a little bit about thermoregulation. So it's the ability of an organism to keep its body temperature within certain boundaries, and you know, different organisms have different boundaries
right.
for the lower and the upper end.
So, but why is there a boundary?
Why is there a boundary? Because, certain metabolic processes need to be maintained within the body, and so they need certain temperatures to, execute those processes. Normal bodily functioning.
Homeostasis?
Yeah, homeostasis. They need to keep homeostasis so that, you know, their metabolism is regulated, so they're not expending energy too quickly or doing things like that.
Kind of. Hydrogen bonds start to fall apart at high heat.
I mean,
your chemistry.
Oh. Like chemistry, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of chemicals.
I fucking love chemistry.
And you love hydrogen bonds.
I didn't know. You were like.
We talked about water last week.
I think you were trying to, like, you know, cue me in on something, and I wasn't following.
No,
I was like,
you really weren't.
I mean, this wasn't as bad as me either. I was just like, I'm not talking about it.
And the biochemist over here, she is just like about vodka soda. Right now,
I mean, obviously, like, we are mostly.
It was the tiniest vodka soda.
That looks like.
Like
a
we
big
talked
bowl.
About in our last episode.
It's just because it's the size of the cup.
Go on, Michael. What was that?
So a lot of organisms are mostly water. Humans are mostly water.
Right.
So I mean, on the low ends of things, like, we can't freeze, otherwise our, you know, metabolic processes would halt, and
that is awesome.
We would cease to live. On the high end of things, you know, things start to break down, come apart, because
yeah.
heat basically destroys everything.
Permanently destroys,
yeah.
right? So some some proteins can be refolded or unfolded. Like pH, I guess, also changes things irreversibly. But so does
heat. We're just not talking about
So on the low end, for humans, it's about 95 degrees Fahrenheit. That's what we call hypo.
Yes.
Hypothermia.
Okay.
95. Yeah, I didn't really think about that one.
So what is the average body temperature in Fahrenheit, since we started this in Celsius and now switched over to Fahrenheit?
I've read 97.6 to 98.6 or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
That's about average for everybody. Menstruating women are a little bit higher than that. They're about half a degree to a degree higher in Fahrenheit. Because they're just
burning
so,
those calories.
So hot.
Oh, man, I love it when I'm on my period because I'm
burning.
Just like, I'm burning so many more calories right now.
You are, yeah. And on
what
the high, so on the high end
are
of things,
are you jealous that I can burn more calories than you guys? Or?
No.
For 1 week a month.
Yeah.
Men have more muscle mass and then just burn
sure?
more
seen,
calories stationed.
Right here.
She's been doing yoga pretty fiercely, so
yeah.
I don't know that that's true.
Yeah, I don't know.
Have you done the hot yoga?
They don't do heated.
They do
during summer.
Oh, during summer.
It's not
okay.
heated during summer. Have you looked at the schedule or?
I mean, I saw on the website that they have heated classes available, but I haven't looked at the schedule.
I'll be checking it out
okay.
when they heat it up. I'll probably hate it.
Hi, John.
Hey, everybody. I'm here.
Nice to see you.
Don't worry, I was filling in for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah.
There was a lot of puns so far. So. It's like you were never gone.
I don't believe it for a second.
So what are a couple of words for sweating? Like, what are a couple of... John is like a talking thesaurus. So.
Perspiration.
Well, let's talk
okay,
about...
Okay, there's one. What's the other one? Hold on, wait. I want it.
Secretion.
No, not quite. Diaphoresis. So, listeners, you know, now when somebody's like, oh, I've been sweating, oh, I've been perspiring, I've been diaphoresising.
I'm not going to be that person.
Nobody out there should be that person.
Okay.
Marshall.
The more you know.
So, organisms generally fall into two categories for regulating their own heat. They're either endothermic or they're ectothermic.
Oh,
not
fuck.
Almost.
And bugs have an ectoskeleton. Yeah, we got it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I want another chance.
Okay,
so
they fall into two categories,
yeah.
right?
So,
Ectothermic.
Birds and mammals are endothermic, so we regulate our own body temperature internally, and we do that by eating. So other animals maintain their body temperature by eating indirectly, but ours, we convert our food into energy, and our body burns it, and we generate heat, and so that's how we maintain our own internal energy and heat source.
And I think an interesting point is just in the way a car engine generates heat due to inefficiencies, we generate heat due to inefficiencies in our metabolic processes.
Sure.
I mean, I guess they've been... There's always that conversation, right, in evolution when something was maybe a concession or an heir earlier on, it becomes selected for. Now we can heat ourselves by metabolizing faster.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wait. Do it again.
ectothermic.
Oh, I don't even know.
Well, I think what you were thinking of is exothermic is a chemical reaction term. So if a chemical
yeah,
reaction
I'm
gives
so
off
smart.
Heat.
I'm a biochemist.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your brain is processing so many things.
Well, the cool thing about being endothermic.
It's so cool.
It is actually, because it means that we can spread out to more varied environments, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. So in contrast, ectothermic organisms rely mostly on outside sources. They also produce small amounts of heat through their normal metabolic functions, but they get most of their, they regulate their temperature mostly from the ambient outside environment, or modulating it somehow.
Classic example, right? We got the snake sunning in the rose.
Yeah, so think of reptiles basking in the sun.
Think about it.
Yeah, think about it.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it out there.
One interesting thing, though, is that because ectothermic organisms rely on the outside ambient temperature, as global warming is becoming a thing, that's going to increase their body temperatures more, and they, so that's directly tied to how much they eat, right? So think of like insects. They don't really, they're kind of, their appetite or their hunger is sort of based on how hot they are, their ambient environment, the temperature that they're in. So as the world gets hotter, bugs are going to be hungrier, so it's going to create a problem for things like growing crops and such.
That's a pretty cool...
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a really doomsday cool prophecy.
Yeah, so as the Earth is getting warmer, bugs are going to get hungrier and eat more plants. And so it's not really their fault. I mean, they just...
So whose fault is it, Michael? Is it our fault?
It's our fault.
It's our fault humans. That bugs are getting hungrier. But anyway, it's kind of cool. So, you know, when reptiles go up on rocks to, like, sun themselves and get warmer, and then, like,
lizards. They become...
Yeah, lizards, turtles, alligators, what have you. They're way
what
slower.
What other ones are there?
Right?
There's so many.
They're fish, what right? Is... Fish are ectotherms.
Oh. Gosh,
isn't there like a poikilotherm? Wasn't there
that's
like a fun...
definitely it. In fact, right? I'm looking at it right here on Michael's Wikipedia, these different divisions, subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
There's only like one organism that fits into like warm-blooded ectotherm. No, what? Is that right? What is the poikilotherm?
Oh, that's like a term that scientists have kind of stopped using because it's... I think there's a lot of contention over whether it's like... I think they don't understand it well enough, and I was reading about that actually right before we started the show, and some scientists have like tried to stop using it because it doesn't really...
So erase that. Yeah. Everyone who's listening right now, erase that from your memory.
I think they just don't understand it fully yet, so...
I think Mark Wahlberg articulated science best in The Happening when he said, some things are just mysteries.
Yeah.
Why are the bees disappearing?
Why are the plants trying to kill us?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
We'll never
Why
know.
Are the bugs hungrier?
Did you guys know that there are certain...
I didn't.
Okay, I didn't know this, but some plants generate their own heat, too. And it's
some what?
Some plants generate their heat, too.
You just got her interest. She is bad.
Yeah. Did you guys know that?
No.
I always thought...
Wait, what? Did you say no? I know for a fact that you have a camera specifically designed to...
Well, I mean,
oh, duh, I do know this.
But, I mean, they give off...
I mean, are you talking about, like, I'm imagining, like, something that I could...
You can, like, feel?
Yeah, like, me as a human, not with my infrared.
I mean, like, so, like,
what are you doing?
If you have an infrared camera pointed at a plant, you'll see some activity because the metabolic processes that are happening within the plant generate some level of heat, but it's very level. That's why very low levels of heat. That's why we say endothermic organisms maintain most of their heat from their ambient environment because they still generate some heat.
Plants still regulate the heat.
They can regulate it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about like creating warmth or temperature. So actually,
well, this is something. I mean, growing up in an area with snow, it's something that people I think are more. Are more familiar to, and it's a question you always ask your parents. It's like, why is there no snow around the trees? And then you get to learn all about metabolism if you've got science-minded parents.
So a lot of plants that in the Araceae family, which is the family that calla lilies are in, it's a monocot family, their flowers produce heat, and it's because it's often hypothesized that it's because they grow in cold environments, their flowers produce heat so that they don't die. And also it attracts insects because a lot of insects visualize things with like infrared kind of...
With a different spectrum of energy, right?
Yeah, ultraviolet light. Yeah.
Well, the skunk cabbage is also in that same family, and it does that as well. And also heating up allows the plant to volatilize whatever compounds it has, which contain the scent attracting the insects. In the case of skunk cabbage, I believe it's trying to replicate the smell of rotting flesh because they're pollinated by flies, which is pretty fascinating.
Right.
Yeah, I heard of that.
But flies don't need the meaty
what,
smell.
And Marshall, what is a butt fly?
Butt flies. Let me tell you about butt flies.
That's why they keep me on, folks.
Is that?
Apparently. Oh, wow. out there in the crowd, they're cheering.
Okay, so let's talk about how like organisms can regulate some of their
temperature. Oh, could I say, I just have one incredible like fact I wanted to bring up based on this endothermy versus ectothermy divide before we moved into any more detail. And that's this theory I became aware of about 6 years ago, so who knows how accepted or discredited it is. But the theory was, this was from Nature, right? So,
Very reliable,
but my memory is not. So the idea was that one of the driving forces for us as endotherms or warm-blooded animals out-competing the ectotherms or cold-blooded animals was the ability of fungus to colonize and parasitize cold-blooded animals. If you look at mortality rates among cold-blooded animals and the causes of death, fungal death is like, I don't remember this exact statistic, but it's close to half.
It's insanely high.
Especially in certain areas and with certain species. So the theory is that when the Earth was warm and all these animals were doing just fine, they still couldn't combat the pathogenic fungus. However, and a good support for this is that our body temperature kills 98% of pathogenic fungus, right? But
because
of the heat. So 0.1 degree lower, and that goes so down, goes down so far. So it shows that our temperature, body temperature, may have actually been selected for by pathogenic mushrooms.
It's just above the like living point for a lot of fungal pathogens.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Cool. You always have such interesting facts.
Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Hey, no problem, folks. And I'm out of here. Play me off, boys.
So regulation of body temperature organismal body temperature.
So everybody can be, like, perspiration. Everyone does this, right?
So, yeah, endotherms, I mean, we generate heat by our own breaking down of food, and we cool ourselves through things like, perspiration and panting.
Breaking down of food?
Yeah.
I was perspiring super hard this morning when I woke up, and then from muscle use too.
I think Michael was saying you eat food to warm your body.
And I are like the
on this level right
weird,
now.
The naughty ones this morning.
But you
the
also
bad boys table.
You also perspire from your muscles heating up and they need to be cooled, and perspiration uses evaporation to cool off your body, right?
So yeah, and also like pili and other like types of like hair or constricting kind of like skin. I can't really think of the word.
Skin?
Phrase.
Did I throw you off?
If you have goosebumps, what are those called?
Goosebumps?
I don't know what you, like the science. I mean, like the scientific.
I think
whatever.
That is the scientific term.
Sure. Okay.
I think it's when you're from your skin tightening. Is that how it actually causes the goosebumps?
Yeah. So your skin is tightening. There's like small muscles underneath your skin that constrict.
Oh, and mine are super buff.
That can. your goosebump muscles.
I like that one. I've seen this girl's goosebumps. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, I get comments all the time.
This girl's goosing 45 pounds at the gym in 5 sets. Yeah.
That was good.
So those are some of the ways that we can regulate. And you've seen, like, some mammals that lack sweat glands, they pant instead, like dogs. Birds can also...
Cats also pant.
Yeah, cats also can.
Stan does it before he throws up.
Stan is Jess's boyfriend. That was a separate point from the cat.
Yeah.
So there's evaporative cooling also. You can...
How much sweat does the average human lose in an hour?
I do not know. Do you know?
2 to 4 liters per hour.
That's just when you're sitting on your couch?
No, that's when you're having sex in the morning.
During heavy physical activity.
What if you don't have sex in the morning?
Then it is 10 to 14 liters per day.
Did that go up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went from a day from an hour to a day. So during activity, it's 2 to 4.
Let me work the numbers here. You guys carry on. I'll just be doing
that. I'm on the 10 to 14 liter a day regimen.
That's a lot, though. 10 to 14 liters
It's disgusting, yeah.
It's like 4 liters in a gallon, just about. So
I love sweating.
It wouldn't fill a bathtub up that far, but I am imagining laying in it.
2 liters? Yeah. I mean,
it would still be nasty.
No, 14 liters? Ugh.
The other day, sweat dropped into my eye and it burned.
It's salty.
Because I was at yoga and I was in some sort of position where I was like, oh, I'm not going to wipe this out of my face. I just let it drip in my eye. And it's the only time it's ever happened. And it burned the shit out of my eye. I couldn't even believe it.
There are other things that animals can do, like, I'm just getting back on topic.
I think sweating is totally on topic.
It is on topic.
Because I was hot and sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
And it burned my eye.
Did you feel alive?
It was the most alive I've ever felt in my life.
Yeah.
That was a good question. So what are other ways of regulating?
Well, we can eat more, so we can get fat in that. So a layer of blubber or fat. Okay, it's not that funny. I just added an L. You guys are like acting like whatever. So you can get... You can be fat and not flat or flat, fat or flat.
But that's thermoregulation from a cold, being too cold.
This is endothermic organism. So, I mean, so mammals or birds can...
This is why we eat a lot more in like the fall to winter.
And a lot of our temperature regulation is actually controlled by glands in our brain as well.
Which gland is the...
Oh my gosh, you're putting me on the spot.
Hypothalamus, maybe?
I think that is correct.
Amygdala.
Brain.
It's actually the biggest gland in your body. Oh no, that's the skin I'm thinking of.
Oregon.
Oh, Oregon, yes. Lowell, Oregon. Yeah.
Yes. So the hypothalamus.
And then animals can also regulate their temperature based on their behavior, which is something that I'm going to talk about later on with elephants.
Oh, what a teaser.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait to hear about these elephants.
Oh. I hope you don't
forget. He has been on these elephants since really early this morning. He's excited.
Look at his lips.
Oh my god. In the meantime, I think we're going to take a break. And then come back shortly.
We'll talk about elephants.
Yeah. Woo.
Thank you. They heard all of that.
So we're talking about heat again.
Yeah, we're talking about heat stress.
Well, so heat stress, right? Climate change is a thing. The planet's warming up, so, you know, fat deposits aren't quite necessary. Yeah,
is the climate really warming up, though? Because, like, I mean, only half of this country thinks so.
I've seen people make snowmen still, so I don't know. I'm not convinced.
There's ice in my freezer all the time. So global wadding.
Yeah.
Obama.
Anyway,
this June we saw record-breaking temperatures, which now we're having, like, because we had such record-breaking temperatures this June, we are having, like, an extra long, extra hot summer, and it's affecting, like, avocados.
My beach body.
So it's
my tan. Just
as a little fun fact, it's affecting avocados. The avocados dropped too soon, so they were a lot cheaper this year. And restaurants like Chipotle issued these statements saying, this was actually back in 2014, they said that they potentially, within the next couple years, because of the cost of avocado prices, because farmers are having such a hard time cultivating them now, that they're going to take guacamole off of the menu.
What?
Yeah. it's very possible that this is going to happen.
This is California.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
If that happens, there will be some policy.
This is not something
this is going to affect everybody.
But also, it's not something that's specific to avocados. So most crops, I think, because the earth is warming gradually, they have to move further and further away from the equator so that it can get to colder temperatures, like grapes.
I think a big problem that nobody that I know is really talking about is the carnivorous forests are having a harder time with the...
Carnivorous forests?
Carnivorous.
No, I heard carnivorous, too.
How do you say it?
I said carnivorous.
No, it's not carnivorous. It's
coniferous. That makes more sense.
You're adding an R in there.
Coniferous forests are having an issue.
Yeah, we worked through that together.
Yeah. Good job. Yeah. Teamwork. Yeah.
What about them?
So there's a borer beetle that lays eggs like once a season, typically, and this causes a bit of death and decay for these coniferous forests.
Yeah.
And now because of the climate change is causing the period of reproduction in
because it increases their metabolism.
Yes, but also because
it's got aggressive.
Full
circle. Yeah. But also because it's warm enough that the beetles can go through two life cycles now in a winter instead of one. And so not only did they're able to reproduce a lot faster because there's less death on the beetle side through trying to survive the winters, but it's also causing the coniferous forests to be depleted at an alarming rate, die off. What is that? Also, there's infant death.
Oh, God.
Sudden oak death?
Sudden oak death. Yeah. Right. That happened. That's been happening at a lot more at an increased pace also.
Stop
because
laughing so hard.
Everybody has giggles today.
It's called crib death.
In the coniferous forest, it's actually a big deal because they are where most of the world's oxygen comes from.
It's where we grow all our cones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ice cream in a bowl every time.
But on a serious note, people think that the rainforests supply a lot of the world's oxygen, and it's the coniferous forests. So.
On that note,
are all cunts.
I love that word.
I like the idea of growing ice cream cones on trees. I don't know.
It's super cute. Yeah.
So it's actually coniferous forest, like coniferous forest.
So there was a study that came out done by UCLA's Climate Center. Not on elephants. This is a separate thing. So it's talking
about
he's saving it for last.
It's talking about the number of days of extreme heat by the year 2100. I wanted to say like a movie.
I couldn't even tell that was your voice. It was so intense.
Yeah.
This fall.
So right now in downtown Los Angeles, there's about 6 days out of the year where temperatures exceed 100 degrees Fahrenheit. By the end of the century, it'll be 54 days. This is what they're projecting. So from going from 6 to 54.
I'm dead.
Huh?
You will be.
Well, this is just in downtown LA. So in Riverside, currently there's about 58 days out of the year where temperatures exceed 100 degrees.
That sounds about right.
Damn it. I'm already living my worst nightmare.
But by the end of the year, I mean, by the end of the century, it'll increase from 58 days to 128 days out of the year.
More than a third of the year.
More than a third of the year.
Oh, my goodness.
Like so, Death Valley. But that was really beautiful. Me and John went there. We loved it.
Oh, it's incredible.
Death Valley is pretty.
Going to be so skinny.
Yeah.
No flat deposits.
So this, basically, it's going to happen either way. Like, whether, even if we cut all of our carbon dioxide emissions, like, today.
Oh, this sounds
today.
Reminiscent of the comments I was making last week, which you guys are calling so dire.
Yes. So even if we cut everything off today, like, it's still going to continue to increase.
We can talk about water Pokemon again. If you want.
Oh, goodness.
So the Earth is going to keep getting hotter. Yeah.
What?
It's going to get hotter.
I feel like this isn't news to a lot of our listeners. Right?
Oh, well, we did a whole episode on climate change, so you can refer back to that one.
I
have something related.
Tell me about elf sweat.
What do you think is gonna survive? What animals do you think are gonna survive the heat?
Cockroaches.
So it's arthropods are like the most heat tolerant organisms, basically. I think there's this one ant it's a desert ant, and it also has the fastest movement speed for relative to its size. So it can move like 300 times its body size per second.
What? That's so scary and awesome.
Yeah, and it can do it at temperatures at up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
Jeez.
So that's like probably the most heat-tolerant organism that exists.
Winner.
Yeah, winning. It's going to win. Yeah. So the Earth is going to continue getting warmer. And probably animals will go extinct.
Okay, I have something to say.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Earth getting warmer, just a fun fact. You know how everybody is drought-scaping their front lawns?
Desert-scaping or zero-scaping?
Whatever, I just made up the drought-scaping thing.
Okay. Ruining is the term I would use. Ruining their front lawns.
There was like some study done, I don't have all the facts, I just read this literally as I was falling asleep last night, by some university somewhere, by some guy, you know, like, everything you need to know. That
cited.
Yeah. But it seemed legitimate when I was reading it. I probably have the tab pulled up somewhere.
Probably.
So that'll be in the show notes?
I probably opened up this on the internet sometime.
Don't worry about the details.
Science is not about details.
Yeah. Do you trust me or do you trust me? So, apparently...
The title of my dissertation.
Yeah, nice. Exactly. So, apparently, people are doing all this zero-scaping, and it's actually maybe not as good because we are getting rid of all this irrigation, which actually cools down the temperature, which is a lot of what John studies, and I give him so much shit, so I have to apologize to you. I felt really guilty when I was reading it, which is maybe why I remember it.
Thank
so
you, Jess. I accept your apology.
Yeah,
I'm apologizing to you on air for all the shit that I give you.
It means all the more for it. Yeah. But yes, people out there, like turf, it cools areas down.
Yes, all this drought, escaping my term, it's going to raise the temperature of this earth, you know, making us hotter.
Well, these changes can be as great as 5 to 10 degrees Celsius, too, which is a massive change.
In suburban areas, I really don't think that this is a gigantic force that's going to hurt ecosystems that aren't already damaged.
But, I mean, but humans are becoming more urbanized.
And
So increasingly, we're getting into more concentrated areas, right? Mm-hmm. Which we already know that there are metropolitan heat island effects.
Yeah.
In existence, because you tell me who in urban areas has a nice big fat space to put in a lawn, who wouldn't already put in?
And this is a huge issue because as the temperatures rise, what was, say, a heat island effect of 8 degrees, right, for an example, where the metropolitan area would be 8 degrees warmer than a forested area nearby.
Sure.
That didn't used to be such a huge issue. But now when you have a third of the year over 100 degrees, people die in heat waves like this. And it's usually the elderly and the young.
I didn't know this, but so if humans are in a wet bulb temperature of 95 degrees Fahrenheit.
Can you define wet bulb?
Yes. that is when the humidity is close to 100%.
Okay.
So if humans are in a wet bulb temperature of 95 degrees Fahrenheit, this is lower than our own body temperature, by the way.
Right.
For 6 hours, they can die.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Also, if you try to screw a wet bulb into a light socket, you could die.
Yeah, you could die.
Don't do that. Also. Yeah, but I mean, but this also gets at an interesting point.
So for more humid areas.
Well, in urban areas too, I remember, and this has kind of died. This was a trend for a little while. People were landscaping the roofs of apartment buildings.
This is something, right? I was actually going to mention is you can do not only the roofs but the walls of like skyscrapers, and that can have a huge effect. Like you literally have a tower radiating.
But we live here in California, and this is an interesting point because water is also a limiting factor here.
But it's that's
so where does it go with ground cover? What kind of ground cover do we use to cool off the area that doesn't require as much water? Because I feel like there are plants out there, maybe like the ice plant. Yes, it's an invasive species, but it produces ground cover quickly and using a lot less water than turf.
Oftentimes the issue with these species that are drought tolerant, like an ice plant, which require low irrigation, is the effect that allows for the cooling is that transpiration of water. That's a major part of the cooling effect. Drought-adapted plants, they transpire less water. So you need a plant like the ever-present turf grass, you guys.
And I just want to go back to the I don't think I ever mentioned
cooling.
The upper end for what humans can tolerate. Internal body temperature is about 106 degrees. Anything beyond that is like you basically start to die.
Yeah, so, no, hallucinations, right? They start at around like 105. And
so,
this is just your proteins unfolding. You're literally falling apart by hydrogen bonds. Okay, go ahead, Michael.
But I mean, I'm just saying like the temperatures here can easily exceed, and especially in Riverside where we are all living, can easily exceed 106 degrees.
But we're endotherm, so it doesn't really matter.
We can evaporate or cool ourselves by sweating and things like that, but only up to a certain point. So if you are outside in prolonged periods, and especially people that don't live in like air-conditioned environments like we do, they can die in these types of...
And temperature extremes are just a stress state. I mean, any animal experiences stress states and they compound. So if you're living in an area which is constantly under heat stress, you're going to have more issues.
That's kind of the big deal here, though, right, with climate change is that climates are becoming less stable. So they swing from one side of the state to the other side, too hot to too cold, and these are just less useful environments for people to be in.
There was actually a study that came out, I think, in like 2006, where they genetically modified mice to have a lower body temperature than a control group of mice. I think it was like half a degree to a degree cooler body temperature.
And
those cooler mice lived longer.
Okay, so slower metabolism.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, heat speeds
heat speeds up all chemical and medical metabolic processes.
What's the normal mouse body temperature?
I'm not sure.
Because this gets back to John's theory.
I mean, it's hard to equate it to. Right.
I
humans,
wish I could take credit for that theory, but
I mean, no, I mean, but to what was raised earlier, and so if these mice were also kept in lab conditions, separate from the environment, they might live longer because they have a slower metabolism, but they would be...
They'll run into those issues.
Oh, my God.
Pathogens.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
They would also have probably just, like, really low energy. Like, they maybe wouldn't want to be active as much. Yeah, like, really lethargic.
Sure. But I think the scarier thing here is, like, if we tried to control how humans respond to the environment by just shifting our internal thermostat, then we open ourselves up to a lot of other...
Right. No, I don't think that's like the answer.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a little bit of what the study was trying to resolve.
I mean, one thing, though, I think a point that I actually meant to bring up earlier, and I kind of slipped my mind, this is something that people they don't really talk about, because we have this, I think that it stems from this mindset that we have not only a right to a safe place to live, but that we have a right to choose that place and then stay there indefinitely. And if we want to live on the erupting volcano, we're going to stay in the erupting volcano. But the thing that's happening here is temperature increases at the equator, right? That means the closer to the poles, the temperature increases too. Meaning that regions like Canada, which once weren't practical for things like agriculture and people did not want to live there because the weather was more harsh, mm-hmm. they're going to become available. Plants are going to shift towards the equators, and towards the poles, and it's not most likely it's going to shift too quickly for the natural ecosystem to cope with that.
Right.
But humanity will be able to take advantage of that effect.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, and we've already talked about that one too, I think, in previous shows, right? Canada, 70% of the Canadian population lives within 90 miles of the United States border to the north. That's like pretty much where the livable zone.
The country has a population lower than California. That's right, right?
I think so.
Yeah, that's correct.
Sometimes people throw around. There's room up there. I mean, if we want it, we'll take it.
I mean, it'll happen.
Yeah, sorry.
But in a less like warring state.
Oh, I mean, tell war me about is elephants. All has to come
so
down to.
I found this interesting research article on elephants, and let me see the exact title of it. It was published in the journal Ecology and Evolution, 2016.
Oh, I love ecology.
And it's called Genetic Connectivity Across Marginal Habitats: The Elephants of the Namib Desert. So, this is. Are you filming me? I need a release form for that.
A release, they're called.
Yeah.
Oh, you said release.
Well, welcome to Los Angeles.
Actually,
everybody's walking around.
I was filming me and Marshall, but your voice was in it.
Yeah. So this article is about how basically Namibian desert elephants and African savanna elephants, which are the Namibian desert is in South Africa and it's extremely hot. They compared the genetics of these two elephants to see how they are coping with the heat from those two areas, because the Namibian desert is much hotter than where the other elephants live.
Mm-hmm.
They found that they are genetically identical. So the only difference between them is that basically behavioral changes, and the elephants are passing down these tricks that they are using mm-hmm. down to younger generations so that they can cope with heat. So I thought that was, and elephants are like my favorite animal because they're so smart and loving.
Aww. I thought your favorite animals were rabbits, bunnies.
I think they're the cutest, but I think elephants are my favorite.
Well, another really interesting thing is they have found skeletons of, okay, so we weren't the only sapiens that existed on the planet, right? And we know of quite a few other species that existed, and in really hot, deserty ecosystems, they had found skeletons of sapient species that were a lot larger than we are, right?
In which environments?
This was in like arid, really hot, arid environments.
That's interesting.
In Africa.
I think usually, yeah, like body size is one of the ways that animals can regulate their body temperature, right? So, like, that's why in cold environments you often see really large animals like polar bears and things like that.
See, but this is
because
the opposite.
They have, right, yeah.
This is why you would find an elephant in Africa.
Right.
Right.
Because what's the reasoning for that?
Because they have a lot more surface area and they're able to dissipate heat more efficiently because of the larger surface area.
Well, yeah, that's like why they have such large ears, is so that they can dissipate.
John really wants to say something here.
The issue would be that as you increase the size, say, of a sphere,
mm-hmm.
the surface area to volume ratio would actually decrease. So a larger animal, that reasoning, I'm sorry, Marshall, your reasoning is flawed.
But the ears
are completely, that's exactly why they have the ears.
Just because you say it's flawed doesn't mean it's flawed. There's actually biological evidence,
Marshall,
that supports there is a larger organism that existed in an arid environment, and also the focal points of heat production in endotherms are in specific spots.
So maybe those parts of their body were larger.
But what you specifically said was
the body.
No, it's also partly... because of the surface area. So it takes a lot longer to warm up in these environments, and it takes a lot longer to dissipate heat. But also with these surface areas, you're able to cool off more efficiently. This is the issue.
And in this, yeah. In the same way, my saying that it was not correct, you using that tone with me does not make you correct, Marshall. You know what? I'm out of this shithole.
Woo! Anyway, so I found this really interesting. My favorite part of this is that scientists tried to reconstruct how these larger sapiens sounded. Mm-hmm. And the size of the vocal cord is inverse to the pitch of your voice. So the longer your vocal cords, actually, the higher pitch your voice sounds.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. That's great. You don't be able to Mike Tyson's.
Right. Wait, why is that?
It's just the longer they are, longer. Okay. Like the strain, like when you
that's funny.
Yeah. Wiggle a cord like that, yeah. And so there are all these gigantic people walking around with really high pitched voices. But they went extinct during one of the ice ages because they weren't able to efficiently stay warm because they were losing so much of the heat from all of that surface area.
Your surface area, an increase of surface area. Everybody out there, if you increase surface area by increasing size, you're going to lose less heat through radiation that way. It's right. A simple fact in physics.
I think it has to be there are like certain body parts that radiate heat, like their ears or whatever.
Exactly.
Or their hands or their feet maybe.
But a simple increase
in size. So if you have big ears, you lose more heat?
But because
humans have pretty big ears.
Humans radiate a lot of their heat through your ears and your extremities. So if you have shorter extremities, you can conserve heat that way.
Warm little jelly bean?
Yes, exactly. Warm little jelly bean.
There's actually an interesting sort of self-regulation in of temperature and endotherms, right? This is something that I don't know why, but it's stuck in my head after zoology class. Countercurrent heat flow throughout extremities, wherein the blood coming away from your heart is surrounded by, veins returning the blood from your extremities. Mm-hmm. So it'll be one artery of warm blood surrounded by veins of cold blood. So by the time the blood in the artery reaches the extremity, all its heat has been transferred to the blood returning towards the body.
Frogs. They use frogs as like a great example of this, right? Oh. In part of heat or thermoregulation is they move. So why you see like certain, one's a vein and the other is an artery.
Arteries go away, I think that's right.
Arteries, it. Arteries go away from the heart and then veins are towards the heart.
So, and why you see some close up to your skin. Actually, frogs use this in capillary action. So they split off these main veins into like a bunch of little ones.
Main vein.
Yeah. And put it near the surface of the frog. So that way they can discharge heat or pick up heat. From circulating their blood toward the surface area.
And frogs use their skin to breathe also a lot more than a lot of
organisms. Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Because their volume is lower and their surface area to volume ratio is higher, so they can actually supply all the oxygen needed by the interior portion of the animal.
Cool.
Marshall.
Keep trying to prove it. That's awesome.
It's proved. Wikipedia, guys.
Anyway, there are multiple forms of regulation in heat, right?
I guess we could talk about plants really quickly. So plants can regulate their heat through their stomatal apertures, partially. So if they close their stomata, like Jess talked about last episode, they will raise their internal temperature a little bit. Not very much because plants don't really give off a lot of heat.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't be able to feel it, but if you did have an infrared camera, you'd be able to see it. So normally, the way you...
Conversely, freezing... We didn't really talk about freezing temperature. That's I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's an only child.
Yeah. Also, it's almost the end of the show. Conversely, like in cold temperatures... Yeah. We didn't really talk about how animals deal with the cold so much because
it's frickin' summer.
I think Archaea.
It's becoming less and less relevant.
Interesting to talk about because we were talking about like alien life on the last episode and like, mm-hmm. how water is the basis of it. And I think Archaea is a really good argument for why do we think that we are the basis of life? I mean, Archaea lives in these really crazy elements, heat being. you know, one of them, they can survive in these extreme temperatures that most of life on Earth cannot.
The files, yeah. Right? The thermophiles.
Yes, exactly, the thermophiles. So archaea, I mean, I was going to say that they were a type of bacteria because that's initially how they were classified, but they are actually these single-celled organisms that are no longer really bacteria, but they are closely related to them. But
when I was talking about the heat-resistant ant, I should have mentioned that it was the most heat-resistant animal and not... not so like Jess? Organism, period.
I see. It does make sense.
Because Jess is talking about bacteria that can survive in much hotter temperatures.
No, archaea. Not bacteria.
Single-celled living organisms.
What is the point if you were listening to me? Like, the point that I always try to make on this podcast, it's very hard to be a woman in science because
okay, Michael, can the only children talk for a minute?
They're talking on you all the time. They don't want to hear you. All the ladies out there, you just got to go.
Turn off her mic.
I'm just kidding.
Wait, what? So what else?
No. So archaea.
I'd like to point out that you actually have basically completely...
John, would you let her speak? You need to calm down.
You've completely recapitulated the speech from the movie Green Lantern, starring Ryan Reynolds, given by the villain.
What?
Of the
I've
movie.
Never seen that movie.
Watch the movie. He says the same speech you've given. It's incredible.
You just called her a villain because she's a female?
No, yeah. No. She's a villain because of other things.
The female part makes her an ineffectual villain.
Because she wears dark lipstick.
Oh, yeah, I know. I am wearing really dark lipstick. Oh. I'm feeling very dark this morning.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So, thermoregulation. It's hot. It's summer right now. And everybody is sweating.
Michael, what did you want to say, Michael?
Oh, no, I was just going to talk a little bit about coldness, but, I mean, we're kind of at the end now.
I'm sorry.
Basically, plants can survive freezing temperatures by making special proteins that allow them to, that allow ice crystals to form around them so they don't freeze the water that is important in other metabolic processes.
Aren't they called, like, freeze proteins or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I think, yeah, sure.
Just like ions in a solution will make its melting temperature or freezing temperature a lot lower.
That's why you add salt.
Right?
Yeah.
Or
ice.
I mean, I think that's something that people lose a lot of the time is just that heat is a measure of kinetic movement of molecules, right? So we're all made up of membranes, which are like thin plastic sheets in a way, right? You heat those up too much, they melt. You cool them off too much, they freeze, right? So you affect the rigidity of a membrane, and that's a method to cope with extreme temperatures.
Love it. Perfect. That is a great way to end the show. Bye, everybody. We're going to talk about poop.
The next episode. Yeah, on the next episode.
Yeah. I can't wait. It's my favorite thing to talk about.
Did we not talk about poop today?
No, we didn't.
Wow.
Just heat.
And by the way, there's still no new Frank Ocean album, so.
Bye.
Bye.